It can be argued that the life of a dairy farmer in Wisconsin is never easy, but for a group of around 75 of them, things got downright scary after they got a letter from milk buyer Grassland Dairy of Greenwood. It was a 30-day notice that the company would stop buying their milk because of a change in Canadian dairy policy. This set off a series of news stories which attracted national and international attention after Governor Scott Walker and President Donald Trump began to weigh in. We've since learned that most of the farmers found buyers, and the crisis has been somewhat averted for now. But there are still many questions about what trade should look like with Canada and whether we're simply making too much milk. Today, we talk with experts in the field of farming, dairy, and international trade. That's this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening to WPR this beautiful Monday morning in May. I'm joined by three experts on the front lines of Wisconsin's dairy trade or dairy business, dairy industry, dairy way of life. First, in studio with me is Darren Von Rudin. He is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and he is an organic dairy farmer himself. Darren Von Rudin, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Rich.
Good to have you here. Next, joining us by the magic of internet, I guess, Brian Gould is a professor of agriculture and applied economics at UW-Madison and he is the state dairy market and policy specialist with UW Extension. He joins us from our studios in Madison. Brian Gould, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. And joining us by phone is Mark Hines. He is a dairy farmer and co-owner of Hines Dairy in Portage. And he was one of the farmers, he and his wife were some of the people that got the letter that said that they were going to be losing their buyer. Mark Hines, welcome to the program.
Morning, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Morning. Thanks for taking time out of your busy days, all of you, to be on the program. Listeners, we want to hear from you as well. If you've got questions about the flap over the letter that went out from Grassland, if you've got questions about how the Canadian milk market works, how our trade works with Canada, let us know. 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. And also, just for the record, I did put out an invitation to Grassland Dairy. I did not receive any response. So with that, Mark Hines, tell us a little bit about your operation there in Portage.
Sure. We're a family farm, six generations in. So we go back 145 years on this farm. We milk about 300 cows, have a crew of about 10 employees, crop, a little over 1,000 acres between crops and pasture. But, yeah, we're certainly a family farm, go back a long time. Family with my wife and I helped, and then my parents, Tom and Mary, are both very much involved in the farm as well right now.
All right. How many cows do you have? Did you already mention that?
About 300 milk cows.
300. Okay. So it almost seems like 300 is kind of being nostalgic, like the old days. You see so many dairy farms that are just growing and growing and growing. So how much milk do you produce? I mean, in volume? And I'm not sure how it goes by month or what how it works.
I ship about 26,000 pounds a day, which works out to a little over 9 million pounds a year, about 9.5 million pounds a year.
That's a lot of milk. And in early April, a story began circulating that a milk buyer, that basically Grassland Dairy, had sent letters to a number of farmers. What did it look like? When did you get it? And do you normally get correspondence from Grassland, or was this kind of out of the blue?
No, this is completely out of the blue. This is completely unexpected. It was Monday, April 3rd. I got that letter in the afternoon. I remember that day quite well, actually. And it was just a generic form letter in the mail. And I just happened to, when I went and picked up the mail after lunch that day, I thought it was strange, actually, that beginning of the letter for Grassland, because it wasn't a normal time to get anything from those guys. And so that's when I, opened it up. And, yeah, there's a generic letter that's saying that in 27 days they're no longer be taking our milk.
So help us, for the people that are listening that aren't in the dairy business, What kind of a shock to the system is that? What does that mean?
Oh, it was a terrible shock because it, you know, that really puts the future of your business in doubt. Because if, as a dairyman, we make milk every day of the year, and I need to have a place to sell it, and if and it's not easy to move from one cheese company to another. So when they say they're no longer going to take your milk in less than a month's time, it's very shocking because there's a real high risk you could lose your whole business. And, you know, I, especially out of the blue, you know, there was no inkling or no warning that this could even happen. And, you know, it really took, I had to read the letter a couple times before I really even understood just what they were saying. And then I brought it in and showed it to my wife and, you know, kind of the same deal. And then, you know, almost immediately it just goes into crisis mode and trying to figure out what are we going to do.
So how much of your time was spent, I mean, from that point on, were you on the phone instantly trying to find other buyers? And what other kind of options did you have?
Yeah, so I got the letter that afternoon. By that night, I'd already placed a few phone calls to a couple of the cheese companies or, you know, different creameries and, you know, just started making feelers right away because I was afraid that, unfortunately, we started hearing pretty quickly that there were several other farms that were all dropped, and we know how difficult it is to move from one company to another. So, yeah, almost immediately we started making phone calls, and by the next day I'd probably talked to at least a dozen, and I didn't really get anywhere with anybody. Most of them just said, well, we'll write your name down and put it on a list, and we'll just, you know, come back to you sometime soon. That's about the extent of it.
Were there concerns that because of the number of people that were getting this letter that had to look for new buyers all at the same time that would overwhelm cheese producers or cheesemakers?
Oh, absolutely. Because most of all the cheese producers I talked to, they said, well, boy, we're already full. We've already got more than we know what to do with ourselves. So the last thing they wanted to do was to take on more milk at that time.
And Grassland was the sole buyer of your milk at that time.
Correct. And that's how all dairies are. They'll all sell 100% of the milk to one company like that.
Sure. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if anyone's got questions or comments. I'm joined by Darren Von Ruden of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, dairy farmer Mark Hines of Portage, and Brian Gould of UW-Madison. We're talking about dairy trade and our relationship with Canada on the west side this hour.
Mark, this is Brian Gould.
Brian Gould.
Richard, can I interrupt for a second?
Chime right in. We'd love to hear from you.
Mark, I was blown away by when I heard about the number of farms that were sent that correspondence, especially in light of what the industry was experiencing just five or so years ago where we didn't have enough milk. I was really surprised because it seemed to me that if producers had a contract with their plant, this wouldn't have happened. I don't know what the industry standard is or operating procedure is in terms of getting a contract, especially a non-cooperative. Do you enter into contracts that say, okay, for the next year, I'm not talking about a price contract, but over the next year, you agree to take my milk? Is that an unusual type of arrangement or –
That in Wisconsin, this is Mark again, in Wisconsin, sure. that is an unusual arrangement. As far as I know, none of those farms or companies have a contract. I believe, don't hold me to this, but I think Wisconsin's one of like a handful of states where that's the case.
Oh, really?
I believe in most, I think all but maybe three states, Wisconsin and Minnesota, and I think New York State, do not have a contract. But I think most of the other states do have some kind of contract. And like you said, not a price contract, but just an agreement that, you know, they will buy the milk. And so with no contract, it allowed Grassland to, you know, at their will, just drop us so quickly.
I'd like to go to Darren Von Ruden. Is this some kind of a state policy? Like, are these contracts enshrined somehow in state laws in other parts of the country?
Well, you know, over the years, there hasn't been a real push to go to written contracts, spelling out certain terms, whether it's dollars per gallon or hundredweight or how many hundredweights you're going to sell on a yearly basis, because we don't really have any kind of a management system in this country that spells those things out.
Okay.
I think the earlier comments that Mark made are pretty accurate about how many other states have where there is contracts. I know And a lot of that's driven by the number of marketing possibilities for farmers in those states. You get down in the southern part of this country and southeastern part of the state where there's only a few buyers, and so the states there have put some rules into place to try to protect the farmers so that there is a market for their milk eventually.
Are there any, is there ever any kind of a contract, a guarantee that someone buying the milk has to get it from this, is any kind of agreement at all in Wisconsin between farmers and?
We are seeing some of that, especially with the larger farms in the country or in the state here. You know, they like to make sure that they have a guarantee, and some of that's driven from their bankers saying, you know, we need to know
sure.
what's coming in and what's not so that we can finance the operation.
But I guess, is there a difference between a commercial company like Grassland or a cooperative situation?
Yeah, well, most cooperatives have just a kind of a general agreement. And when you sign the DADCAP form that allows you to sell grade A milk and your particular processor takes that, then they're going to take your milk until either they say they don't need it anymore or the farmer decides he wants to move someplace else.
Okay.
So there's no timeline on that whatsoever.
Yeah. It makes it sound like there is the practice is no agreement even with a cooperative.
Yeah, until you get to the larger farms. We've got just about a 2,500 cow dairy 5 miles away from us, and they're under contract with Foremost Farms. Mm-hmm. And would like to, they're in the process of trying to expand again too, which is hard to believe in this type of environment that you may be thinking about that. But Foremost more or less told them they'll continue to take the same amount of milk today mm-hmm. or in a year that they are taking today, but they won't take any more if this expansion happens. So,
yeah.
Yeah, the one takeaway from this, again, this is Brian Gould.
Sure.
One takeaway from this is we probably need to change the industry practice to try to get some sort of medium to long-term commitment, whatever those terms mean, for taking milk, so that this 30-day deadline won't happen again. And unfortunately, with the supply-demand situation, it's hard to get. I would think it would be hard to get the processors to enter into such agreements because there's so much milk around.
But where would you even begin? I mean, would you have to lobby the state government, or would that be a federal thing?
That's a very good question. I'm not sure about that because I assume that Grassland was a part of the federal order system. They were. I assume that they were. Is that correct, Mark?
I'm not sure.
I believe so. Yeah. This is Mark again, and I would say that one of the real issues with this is the time factor, and if the producers would have had, say, a 4 or 6 month notice that Grassland
right.
was no longer in peak production, this wouldn't have been near as much of an emergency situation. The time and the pressure of such a short time period is a real problem here.
Well, especially the time of year with the flush happening.
Right. And also, let me jump in here because I've been reading a lot on message boards and whatnot that Grassland knew this was coming. They knew about it. Whatever dairy policy changed, and we'll go to you, Brian Gould, about this, but that this policy changed last year, that it was a full year, and they knew it was coming. What about that, Mark Hines? Have you heard that as well?
Yeah, and I'd heard that as well, and I think, you know, part of this problem was because, and Grassland knew it was coming, but they didn't, of course, tell us, and they before that came through with Canada, they were making money on the deal. Some of the other creameries that I talked to said that they knew what Grassland was doing, but because they thought there was some risks there that market could go away, which is absolutely what happened. And kind of back to the time function, and I kind of feel like personally that if Grassland would have been beholden to take my milk, say, for 6 more months, then maybe they don't take those risks that they took up there with that Canadian deal.
That's a good point.
That was a high-risk market, I feel.
That's a good point.
Just to follow up with Mark, the product we're talking about is a fairly specialized product, and on a percentage of Wisconsin production basis, it's fairly small. Obviously, it represents 100% of Mark's production. So it's important to put that into perspective and try to solve this situation.
What is the product, the specialized product?
Ultra-filtered milk. That's where they pass milk through a series of membranes to remove the non-wanted solids mm-hmm. and some of the water, and keep the protein.
And that's used primarily for we're all completely
for fortifying milk and cheese vats. You get higher yields when you have higher relative protein,
and
so they have a higher protein content milk there, and they add it to increase their yields.
Now, Mark, I'm just curious. This is kind of it's not off topic, but do you filter the milk yourself, or is that you just sell the milk and then they do the work at Grassland, or they did?
Right. So I sell just the milk as a commodity to Grassland, sure. and then they, you know, some of it went for the ultra filtered milk, and some of it went for butter or for whatever they're doing. And just kind of the side, the producers they cut, it was based on geography, and they just cut producers. The farther away they were from the plant, those are the ones that got cut. And that was our criteria for deciding who got to stay and who got to go.
Well, Greenwood and Portage are, they're not very close to each other, and it's surprising that they reached that far to pick up milk.
Sure, and they even went farther than me.
Really?
So I wasn't the farthest one by any means.
Another thing that's come up a lot, and mostly in comment sections, but I think some people with the Farmers Union have done some op-eds on this, that Grassland is doing some vertical integration as well. And again, we've invited them on the program. They did not respond. But this Cranberry Creek dairy situation near Eau Claire, there's already a large, I think it's a CAFO already, and they want to expand even farther. And there's rumors. I don't know if it's been proven, but rumors that Grassland wants to, once it expands, they want to buy it, which I guess makes business sense. You can control the costs better. But at the same time, it's an expansion in the face of this production glut that we're seeing. Darren Von Ruden, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we've got members that live in that area and are keeping a close eye on it. And they've got court documents in their hands that have Grassland as the financier of the current operation that they're, it's 1,000 cows or 1,100 cows currently. But from what the paperwork says and the attorneys that they've talked to, these members, it looks like Grassland is eventually going to buy this operation. Currently, they're helping the producer through financial issues and things like that, but eventually it sounds like, and the permit that's been applied for is through Grassland. It's not through the Cranberry Creek owners.
Before we go to break, I want to go back to Mark Hines and kind of wrap up some thoughts on just getting the letter and what you'd gone through. I imagine it was very stressful. So how long did it take? Because you are one of the farmers that thankfully were able to find someone to buy your milk.
Yes.
How long did it take? And, I mean, were you dealing with sleepless nights and worries about having to get out of the business?
Oh, yeah, that was extremely stressful. It was we were out for 2 weeks with no home for our milk yet, and we were one of the very first ones picked up. Mullins Cheese actually picked us up, so I want to thank those guys. But, the stress level was extremely high because you're going through emergency options and, what do? You know, sleepless nights, absolutely, and emergency planning. And are you going to have to sell? You know, we've been on this farm 145 years, my family has, so there's very little this farm hasn't been through or seen,
sure.
In the course of that time. But, you know, what are we going to do? Because if I can't sell my milk, I have to sell my cows. And, you know, I have a herd of cows that I have a lot of pride in. They're a registered herd that I've worked really hard to make the best I can. And if, you know, you have to turn around and sell those in a fire sale for, 30 cents on the dollar, what they're worth, that's not a long-term solution. And, you know, there's a real risk. You know, do you lose, how long can you get it to work? You know, you might lose the farm, you might lose your business. You know, there's just extremely stressful, extremely mm-hmm. stressful. I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
So Mullins Cheese picked you up and a lot of the other producers as well. Are you getting, this is proprietary information probably, but are you getting the same price that you did before? Or because there was some concern that some cheese companies or some buyers would kind of take advantage of this situation.
Sure. As far as I can tell, I'm going to be getting, I haven't had a paycheck from Mullins yet, so I can't tell you for sure, but they said they would pay me the same as their other patrons are being paid. So they came in and offered me a fair price. And well, like a dairyman, we never really know what our price is going to be until you see your check anyway, because it's always a moving target. But yeah, and there was some initial offers from some of the other creameries kind of lowball offers, but I do believe that what the other farmers signed on with ended up being a much more fair price. I don't know if they'll be 100% of what the other producers are getting, but I think they're going to be pretty close. So it's much better because there were some original very lowball offers that some of the other places were trying to take advantage of people with.
Well, with that, let's take our first break here on the west side. We'll be back in literally 1 minute to talk a little bit about some of the changes, the actual policy that changed with regard to the Canadian milk market. And then we're going to get into some of the politics of it, because it certainly raised quite a ruckus at the state and national level. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side. I'm joined by Brian Gould, Mark Hines, and Darren Von Ruden. We're talking about dairy, Canada, trade, and we're going to talk about NAFTA, too, and the president. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. If you're a dairy farmer and you've got the radio on in the barn, chime in. This is the perfect time. 1-800-228-5615. We'll be right back.
The 29th Annual Senior Americans Day returns to UW-Eau Claire June 6th. Participants age 55 and better can choose from more than 40 inspiring breakout sessions to learn about local history, cultural diversity, health and wellness, and creativity. Details at the Continuing Education website.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. It was about a 30-second break. We're talking about dairy, and basically we're talking about a letter that went out from Grassland Dairy, which is based in Greenwood here in west central Wisconsin, going out to about 75 farmers, mostly in southeastern Wisconsin, letting them know that they were going to be terminating their contracts and that those farmers were without a supplier in 30 days. This all had to do with a change in policy, supposedly, with regard to Canada. So to guide us through this and help us understand it, we've got Brian Gould. He's a professor of agriculture and applied economics at UW-Madison. He is the state's UW Extension dairy market and policy specialist. We've also got Mark Hines, one of the affected farmers in Portage. He's a dairy farmer and co-owner of Hines Dairy. And Darren Von Ruden is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, which had lots to say about this issue and about the overproduction that they would argue is happening in Wisconsin and the nation as a whole. There is a glut in the dairy market and what to do about it. If you've got a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines, and we'd love to get your take. So, Brian Gould, this all started with some kind of a policy change in Canada last year, last spring. What was it?
Well, it was an internal pricing policy. We have to differentiate the.
So this wasn't a trade thing.
It obviously it affected trade.
Sure.
Both Canada and the U.S. Most of the U.S. milk is priced under classified, what's called a classified pricing system. That is where the value of your milk is based on the products that are made from your milk. And what Canada did was they created a new category of milk for ultra-filtered. I haven't read the details of that class of milk, but they created this new class of milk because ultra-filtered milk was not around when NAFTA was established. So the NAFTA rules don't really apply to it because, again, it wasn't included in any of the discussions. So what Canada did is they saw the Canadian dairy industry, which they have a very controlled industry in that they have marketing boards and quotas and a very regulated type of milk industry. They saw this production coming over from New York and Wisconsin primarily, and a little bit from Minnesota, but primarily Wisconsin and New York. And they said, look, why can't we capture that? And what they did is they created this new class of milk that undercut the classified prices that needs to be paid by plants in the U.S. Plants in the U.S., if they're part of the federal order or California systems, they have to pay, if they want to be part of those systems, have to pay at least the minimum value of that milk based on its class. Mm. And so there was very little room for the cheese plant to lower the price unless they wanted to drop out of the federal order system, and that's a little bit risky. So It was an internal decision. Obviously, it affected trade because it increased the relative price of U.S. milk products and, excuse me, U.S. Ultra-filtered milk. So the domestic producers of ultra-filtered milk in Canada, which has much higher milk prices, but the pricing system for this class of milk was set lower, they grabbed that market share. And that's from their cheese plant perspective, it makes economic sense in that they can get the same product for a lower cost per pound.
And so if this change happened a while ago, if Grassland knew about it, was everyone else in the dark other than the people that actually were selling products directly to Canadian companies?
Well, I think it was, again, it's a little bit, flew under the radar a little bit because it is such a small market. Again, I'm not
very niche.
I'm not negating the impacts on the producers that were affected.
Right.
So, again, I think it's sort of flown under the radar. And my guess is that the reason there was a delay in the announcement was I would think that Grassland had a long-term contract with their cheese plants. So they were waiting, I would think, if I was shipping product over across country borders, I would think I'd need a delivery contract and some things that gives you the right to ship over that border. So I'm suspicious that that's why it took so long for this announcement to come out. And I agree with Mark. It's not only the dropping of the market, but it's the timing of the market and the limited amount of time to react. If this was known well in advance, that's a specific issue.
We've got a caller on the line. Let's go to Jack in Altoona. Jack, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hey, just a comment, and it deals somewhat with the subject you're talking about, but I've got relations that farm, and they say, and I've heard it from other people, that part of the problem or the main problem with this situation is it's a general overproduction of milk that is causing the problem. What happens is the farmers are, you know, there's so much milk on the market that it's driving the price down, and therefore a lot of farmers add cows to meet their expenses, which adds more production, the price drops. So the thing with, you know, so it's not so much a Canadian issue. You'll see farmers all over are having, you know, their milk is still being accepted, but, you know, one of the other problems they're having is the price of milk, and that has to do a lot with the overproduction of milk. And I know people are working on marketing issues trying to improve that, but, you know, I think something has to be done with the overproduction of milk to make it competitive so the farmer gets a decent price and so that you don't have situations where farmers are turned off.
Thanks for that, Jack. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. I want to go to Darren Von Ruden for this because this is an issue that your group has been talking about for a long time. Canadian groups were saying, in fact, if I can find it, there is a quote here from Isabel Bouchard, I think that's how you pronounce it, of the Dairy Farmers of Canada group, saying, she said, quote, "We don't feel good about U.S. farmers going out of business, but you know what? It's not our responsibility. It's your responsibility as a country to manage your production." So Canada says, don't blame us. What do you say, Darren Von Ruden?
Well, you know, as an organization, Wisconsin Farmers Union, National Farmers Union, for decades already have been talking that we should have some kind of either a supply management program or an inventory management program, something that's going to make sure that we don't overproduce. You know, as a commodity, milk is very if you don't use it in a couple of days, it's no good anymore. Right. So you've got to make sure that you've got a market for it. And why, as farmers, we continue to think that we can produce our way out of a bad situation, it just makes things worse. And
it seems like there's a lot of attention being toward trade. Like, where else can we export our milk to as a solution? You know, finding new markets.
Right. You know, and from what we're hearing, too, there's markets around the United States that haven't been tapped yet. It's just a matter of the processors and the industry itself going out and finding those markets and getting cheese into those markets. When you start talking about taking milk products across the ocean, there's a process that has to happen between the farm and the tanker that it goes on to go across the ocean too, that costs money. And so to take it into other nations that might not necessarily have the standard of living that we have here in the U.S., you're really cutting your own throat, because you've got to sell it at such a low price that you really can't afford to continue marketing that product.
Brian Gould, I think you want to chime in as well, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. I've been impressed by the U.S. dairy farmers' ability to increase production. If you look at the production per cow,
it's amazing.
I graphed production per cow in the U.S. from 1946 to the present, and it looks like a 45-degree line, mm-hmm. with no negative downturn in that production. There's no sign of that coming to an end. It's an incredible productivity growth. About 15% of the U.S. milk solids are exported, and we produce primarily 80 to 90% of our milk goes to cheese in Wisconsin. We don't export a lot of cheese, but we do export, 5 to 10% of our production, maybe a little bit less than 10%. So that is an important market, the export markets, and the reason being is that if you look at the growth in domestic demand for dairy products, it's less than what is the growth rate in the production of raw milk in the U.S. So we have to have export markets. And that's been recognized by the industry for the last decade, that the growth markets are Southeast Asia, developing countries, and China. Mm-hmm. And if we've had a couple of years where we lost some export market share because of price situations, and it exacerbated the price problems. Look at 2009 was a classic example.
Yeah.
And if you look at the prices that exist today, we're about in line with international prices in terms of all the – remember, we're not really shipping a lot of fluid milk, maybe to Mexico and maybe a little bit to Canada. I don't know those numbers specifically. But we're talking about hard manufactured products that have a pretty standard pretty standardized non-fat dry milk, skim milk powder, cheddar cheese, mm-hmm. butter, although the overseas butter has a little bit more fat content than the U.S. butter. But those export markets are critical. If we were to lose even a fraction of those markets, we'd have – that milk's got to stay somewhere. It's got to stay in the U.S., and it's got to be converted to a storable product. And if you look at the levels of stocks, they are increasing for the various products, but relative to production, not so much. But still, if those stocks start really increasing to take care of this extra milk, there could be a significant downward pressure on milk prices. Not to say that they're relatively low now.
Right.
I'm just looking at the futures market, and the average for the next 12 months is $16.40 per hundredweight for Class 3 milk. That's in the medium portion of the distribution. So those are the price conditions, and that's the situation with respect to dairy exports. We need them.
And I want to go to Mark Hines, and I was told once on this show by a dairy farmer that $15 was break even, and that probably is different from farm to farm, I'm sure. But if we're looking at dairy futures at $16. Dollars a hundred weight, and I'm just wondering, in this discussion about overproduction, you've got 300 cows there. How, first of all, have you been able to, survive without growing your herd to five figures? And second, do you think we've got an overproduction issue in this country and in the state?
Well, yeah. First of all, the $16 milk. I mean, I think that sounds about like a break-even price for most dairymen. It depends on a lot of different factors. But
right.
I think that most dairymen, if they're honest with their bookkeeping, really aren't making very much money right now, especially, if you look at how much you work and your capital investment and what you're getting back from it, and your return is very low. And, break-even is not a very good place to be as a business that's not making any money. And as, in the export markets, like you said, are super important, and then look at the ripple in the Wisconsin dairy industry from the very small export situation with Canada, and that's a very small part of the whole industry, but boy, did that make a big ripple in this whole place.
Yeah.
And then as far as, our farm has grown over years, when I was a kid, we milked 42 cows. And then when I was around in college, so about 15 years ago, that's when my parents built a bigger barn. And we went to about 200 cows, and then now we're about 300 cows. And, you know, and like Brian said, the production is, you know, every year gets better. The cows milk, make more milk. And certainly overproduction is a problem. And I think some of this, I think it does come back to the profitability, and the farmers really aren't very profitable. So then they end up adding cows to spread out more pounds of milk over more cows and more risk, you know, spread your risk that way. And I know the lenders have certainly pushed for those kinds of things because it makes their bottom line look better on the balance sheet. So to me, it starts as a profitability issue. It's one reason why, it's not the only reason, but it's one reason why there's so much expansion in the business. And it's because people kind of have to, trying to pay the bills. And as far as overproduction, I mean, that really is a problem. I think a lot of farmers, if we could figure out a way to sell, you know, a little bit less milk for a better price, and the same thing with the processors, if they could sell a little bit less cheese for a better price, we'd all be farther ahead.
Brian Gould?
Yeah, I was going to say it. Also, there's a significant lag time in how the industry can react to price changes. Think about how long it takes for you to increase your herd size if you're doing it internally.
Mm-hmm.
It takes years. And again, we had high prices in 2014, record prices, all-time record milk prices. And what farmers naturally did is they expanded. Their profits were
sure.
Going up at $24, $25 class 3 milk. Well, we've got those cows now, right?
Right.
And unless you cull them, they're still going to be producing.
So the
dynamics are – it's a challenge for this industry that it's not like certain crops like spinach, you know, vegetables or other crops where you can move production up and down quite rapidly. Mm-hmm. It takes time.
Mark Hines?
Well, along that line, too, sure, 2014 was a record year, but, you know, in perspective, 2009 was a record low year. And
right.
So if you average those 2 years out, you're back to average again. And our farm in Portage in 2012 through the drought was a near pretty much complete crop failure. And 2013 wasn't a lot better. It was probably the second worst year in the last 10. So we kind of needed a 2014 to catch up from
sure.
all the 4 years from the 5 years in front of that. So
wow.
Even if it's a record profit, I
totally understand that. And I'm trying to make that comment, but all I was trying to get at is when you as a producer make some investments, there's a real lag in that.
I agree 100%.
You know,
I agree 100%.
Excuse me. What is the options then? What are the options? I've seen some people talking about spreading milk as fertilizer, culling. I mean, so do we need to dump milk to make the prices go back up and make it more profitable? Or, I mean, what are the options here? Brian Gould, I'll start with you.
There'd have to be a real structural change in Congress to get supply management being considered a viable option. That was early on in the last farm bill, some discussion of that, but that was quickly eliminated. And given the new composition of the House and Senate,
I would think hands off is the way to go.
I don't think control supply management. Now, what was what Mark mentioned, and there's some companies that are doing their own supply management, as was indicated. They're saying, hey, we're up to capacity, so we're going to take only 1% more than we're going to take last year because we just can't handle it anymore. Well, that's an individual plant doing the supply management. If a producer, say, is producing 5 or 10 or 15% more milk because he added on, and he's going to have difficulty finding a destination for that milk, just like the producers that we're talking about now.
So
it's a real problem.
It sounds like there may be pain, and the question is, I guess, who feels the pain? Let's take our final break here on the West Side. We're talking about dairy. Now, we talked a little bit about the concerns over overproduction. I want to get back into the situation with Canada because some of the political statements that were made were pretty inflammatory. And then I want to kind of transition looking ahead and looking at the possibility of the U.S. renegotiating NAFTA or perhaps even pulling out of it completely. I am joined by Darren Von Ruden of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Mark Hines of Hines Dairy in Portage, and Brian Gould of UW-Madison. If you've got a question or a comment, let us know, 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide-open phone lines. We'll be back in a minute, 9 seconds.
WPR and the Green Bay Packers present Packers History with me, Larry Mueller, at Lambeau Field on June 22nd. We'll be talking with Packers team historian Cliff Kristol about games, players, and coaches from 1919 to today, followed by a tailgate-style reception. Details and ticket information at WPR.org/100.
Support for WPR comes from the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin Foster Care Program, dedicated to helping thousands of Wisconsin foster kids connect with caring families. More about being a foster parent is at chw.org/TFC.
UW Eau Claire Continuing Education and UW Extension connects people with possibilities, degrees and certificates for working adults, professional and workforce development, youth and community programs, and resources for business. Details online at uwec.ly/CE.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio Stations 88.3 WHWC, Menominee Eau Claire, and 88.7 WRFW. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about the situation for dairy farmers, 75 of them, that got letters in early April saying that they would not, their milk would no longer be needed. Those letters sent out by Grassland Dairy. Today we're talking about that issue. We're talking about the bigger topics of trade with Canada and just how the, I guess, the health of the dairy market as a whole. 1-800-228-5615. Is the number to call in. We've got wide open phone lines. Joining me by phone, Mark Hines. He's a dairy farmer and co-owner of Hines Dairy in Portage. In our studios in Madison, Brian Gould is a professor of agriculture and applied economics at UW-Madison and a state dairy market and policy specialist with UW Extension. And I already mentioned Darren Von Ruden. He's in the studio with me. He's the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. So I wanted to, even though our dairy trade with Canada makes up a pretty small percentage of the total trade of products going back and forth with our northern neighbors, this definitely caught national attention when this whole flap came up. Everyone from Governor Scott Walker to President Donald Trump chimed in. Governor Walker said that Canada was proposing new incentives for processors, which we've already talked about, to purchase Canadian milk, while at the same time illegally subsidizing the export of Canadian dairy products in excess of Canada's World Trade Organization deal. I have no idea what that means. Brian Gould, is Canada illegally exporting things, as Governor Walker says?
There's been some history of Canada getting in trouble with the WTO in terms of their export pricing of milk, and they've been made to change their policies. I don't know about the current situation. But I do want to mention that the dairy industry is very concerned about renegotiating NAFTA. Mm-hmm. Mexico is the number one export market for dairy products. Canada is about number three. It depends upon what China's doing. Again, and there's, like was indicated before, there's a lot of milk out there. There's a lot of milk in other countries. And in terms of Mexico, they don't care where they're going to get non-fat dry milk because it has a regular standard of identity. So, if there's uncertainty about the supply coming from the U.S., what do? Is you enter into contracts with other sources for that product.
I wanted to hear, transitioning into this discussion about NAFTA, President Trump visited Wisconsin last month, and he was speaking about other trade issues, but then this came up. He was at an event in Kenosha.
We're also going to stand up for our dairy farmers in Wisconsin. And I've been reading about it, and I've been talking about it for a long time, and that demands really immediately fair trade with all of our trading partners, and that includes Canada. Because in Canada, some very unfair things have happened to our dairy farmers and others. And we're going to start working on that with Ron and with Scott and with Paul and with all of your representatives. What's happened to you is very, very unfair. It's another typical one-sided deal against the United States, and it's not going to be happening for long. So, Scott, you and Ron and myself and Paul and everybody else, we're going to get together, and we're going to call Canada, and we're going to say, what happened? And they might give us an answer, but we're going to get the solution, not just the answer, okay? Because we know what the solution is, all right?
We know what the solution is. Brian Gould, do you think that solution is, as you already mentioned, kind of trying to renegotiate and punish Canada in some way with a new trade agreement?
The world environment of the dairy industry is a lot different than in 1994 when NAFTA was put together. In 1994, the U.S. exported about 2 to 3% of their dairy milk solids. Now it's 15%. I'm concerned that we may get what we President Trump may get what he wants, and have a renegotiation of NAFTA, and we could lose those markets. I'm really concerned about that. There's a lot of milk out there. New Zealand, the EU. EU has a ton of stocks of non-fat dry milk in storage that they'd like to get onto the market. Again, if you not only the dairy industry, but if you look talk to the corn growers,
right?
There's a lot of concern about losing Mexico as a corn market because again, number two yellow corn is number two yellow corn wherever you get it. So you got to be a little bit careful. You make it what you wish for.
I wanted to go to Mark Hines, and I'm just wondering what the dairy farmers themselves are feeling. Do you listen to things the president says with regard to international trade and think about how it might affect your bottom line? I mean, are you concerned about a renegotiation of NAFTA?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I listen to these things. I can't agree with Brian. We got to be careful we don't make the problem worse. Yeah, I mean, as far as what they do, you know, if they screw this up and you screw up your export market to Mexico, you know, most of the dairymen also are buying corn or selling corn.
Yeah.
And the EU is absolutely flooded with milk, worse than we are right now. We need to be careful here. We need to tread lightly. I guess, so I know politicians are going to give their talking points. I kind of lean towards more of the farmers kind of need to kind of try to figure out, fix this ourselves. More than, I mean, I would love the politicians to come in and do something and make it better, but I also, I guess my strategy is what can we do to help ourselves?
Is that, I don't want to try to be dramatic here or sensational, but is that because you don't have a ton of faith in politicians figuring it out and getting it right?
Yeah, I mean, you maybe could say it that way, and it's, I mean, I guess for me, the dairy is my sole focus, and the politician is spread,
sure,
you know, so many different directions, so I'm going to put everything I've got into this, into making sure this works. And, you know, I've got a lot of skin in the game, and they don't. So, you know, we just need to make this work and fix this problem.
Do what you can for yourself and hope for the best in the other realms. Darren Von Ruden, your thoughts on Trump trade and NAFTA?
Well, you know, I think I agree with Mark. You know, we as farmers, we need to take this problem into our own hands and try to correct that problem because depending on the processing industry or the government to do it, it's probably not going to happen because of the cheap food policy of this country. We had on April 28th, three farmers from the Canadian Ag Organization came to Madison and sat down and chatted with them for a couple hours. And, you know, it's pretty startling. Under NAFTA, the U.S. is shipping about $25 billion worth of agricultural products into Canada, and they're sending about $23 billion back. So as far as, a pretty much a fair trade agreement, that seems like it is on a dollar value. If you look at the different total dollar amounts between the two countries, of course, U.S. has quite a bit larger total value. So on a percentage-wise, we probably should be sending a little bit more into Canada than what we are to get that to be a more of a fair trade deal.
We've been hearing a lot about trade deficits, that the U.S. has trade deficits with almost everybody else in the universe, I guess.
Yeah, and that's on everything except for agriculture. Just about every trade deal that we're in, agriculture is a positive as far as deficit numbers. And so that's why you hear a lot of times that we need to
renegotiate these, but let agriculture alone because we do have that positive trade number.
Let's take the last call of the day. Gordon in Oliva is on the phone. Gordon, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm wondering, I'd like to hear more from the organic person on why don't farmers go more organic, where the milk price is $41 a hundred, as I understand it. And secondly, is it necessary for these farmers to milk three times a day?
All right, great questions. Darren Van Ruden?
Yeah, you know, I think the dollar amount has dropped a little bit this year now. Last year, a lot of the guys on the top side were getting $41 a hundredweight. The issue of getting into that industry is it's a three-year cycle to get your cropland
certified.
Transitioned over and certified. And then another, well, you can do it in 3 years total, but it takes a year to get your cows transitioned over too. So, for instance, if Mark wanted to get into that process, you know, that 30-day notice he got is not even close to the year that it takes to get his cows transitioned over. And,
gotcha.
And it's interesting on the organic side, too, there is a little bit of a supply management program within the processing industry there to make sure that there isn't an oversupply of product going on the market.
With that, we are running out of time. I just wanted to get some last takes from all of you. Brian Gould, the future, I mean, we've already talked about NAFTA. That's something that everybody will be watching. But what do you see in the near-term future with regard to dairy farming and the oversupply issue, trade, et cetera? Any predictions?
Well, I one prediction I know is that American producers are going to be more efficient. They're going to be more productive as we go along. There's no sign of that declining. I don't know what the outcome's going to be, there's more things when you're talking about renegotiating NAFTA. There's more than dairy involved with that.
Much more.
And so I'm a lot of uncertainty there.
Yes, and as if there wasn't enough already. I'm Rich Kramer. Thank you all for your discussion. Darren Van Ruden is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Thank you. Mark Hines is a dairy farmer and co-owner with his wife of Hines Dairy and Portage. Thank you very much. I'm glad that you were able to find a buyer. Brian Gould is professor of agriculture and applied economics at UW-Madison and the state's dairy markets and policy specialist with UW Extension. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks to the callers. Great questions. Next week, we're going to be featuring a broadcast of a roundtable discussion on fake news that was held at UW-Eau Claire. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning. All right, everybody, I think we're clear. Let's see here. Brian, you still there?
A test.
Oops. I pushed the wrong button. There you are.
Yes, I am.
All right, and Mark?
Yep, I'm still here.
Hey, thanks so much, man. I appreciate you hanging on the phone. I know it sucks holding a cell phone to your ear for an hour.
Oh, that's fine. That went kind of quick.
It really does, yeah. It really does. You all did very well, and I just hope that we shed some light on it. I'm kind of late to the game because this has all been... You know, in the media's eyes, this is all solved because most of the people found their suppliers.
Whether that's a long-term solution
absolutely.
For these folks or a short-term solution is the issue.
I think it was that's a short-term solution, but I think it shed light on some bigger problems in the industry,
yes.
In my opinion. Yes. So hopefully we can use this as a platform to make things better.
Right.
I hope so, too.
Yeah, we'll see, hopefully. Well, take care. Best of luck out in the field.
Good luck to
thank
everyone.
You so much. Brian, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming to the studios in Madison. And Darren, thanks for driving up. I appreciate it. Take care, everybody.
Have a good week, guys.
Again. All right. Thanks.
We'll do.
Bye-bye.
Before you go...